8. The cavalry troop wheeled about, placing Kanawha and Vecina at the front of their formation. Kanawha turned his head slightly to speak to Vecina. "I thought I saw the air shimmering back there," he said, turning around a bit more. "If I didn't know better, I'd say it was some kind of magic." He didn't get to complete his sentence as the horse suddenly shifted underneath him, knocking his left foot out of the stirrup. He started to slide off, then felt her hands wrap around his waist and pull him back. "You should pay more attention to your riding," she said. Her hands stayed around his waist even after he had his foot back in the stirrup, and he decided keeping his mouth shut was the better course. Movement far off to the right pulled his eyes away, and Kanawha caught a glimpse of black and red fur. He smiled. Jir could trail them from a safe distance and had the speed and stamina to keep up as long as he didn't try to mark too many trees along the way. Kanawha was still watching the forest when the sergeant steered his horse in front of Kanawha's, causing him to pull up.
"It's a bit dangerous out here, sir, m'lady, and I was wondering if you wouldn't mind taking the rear of the column. It would ease my mind to know we had an officer of your caliber back there watching out for us, sir."
He doffed his helmet to Vecina and smiled.
"You think that's necessary?" Kanawha asked, puzzled by the request.
Vecina gave his waist the smallest of squeezes, but it was enough to lighten his heart.
"Good idea," Kanawha said before the sergeant could change his mind.
He was in such a good mood he decided he might have misjudged the cavalry all these years, their most recent attempt to kill him notwithstanding. To be fair, that was everyone's reaction until they got to know him.
He was thinking of telling the Duke how impressed he was with his men when he overheard one of the troopers talking to a mate.
"Bloody hell, I thought the Sarge would never get that bugger downwind."
"You there!"
Kanawha said loudly, startling the man who had just spoken.
"Yes, sir,"
he said, reining in his mount to ride alongside them.
"I've been away from the civilized world for a while. Perhaps you'd be so kind as to catch me up on what has transpired in the Empire this past year."
The man's eyes widened, even as his nose twitched. Before the trooper could answer, Vecina whispered in Conowa's ear,
"Sergeant Lorien has a rather large horse. I could always ride with him if you'd prefer."
"On the other hand, I'm sure Ms. Tekoi will be able to fill me in."
"Dismissed,"
he said, finding that giving an order after all this time wasn't so hard after all. The trooper saluted and quickly cantered up to the front of the column, leaving Kanawha and Vecina alone.
"You really do have a way with people, don't you?" she said.
Kanawha tried turning again the saddle, but gave up when more pain lanced across his chest.
"It started at a young age. The point is, or rather was," he said, waving at the lost point of his own ear, "that if you were born with a black tip, her taint was believed to run deep in the blood. To the elves of the Hinta, especially the Long Watch, it doesn't get much worse than that. Not that long ago, they just abandoned a marked baby on the plains beyond the forest to die. So no, if I don't get along well with others, it might be because most have always wanted me dead. It tends to make one a little antisocial."
"But why mark babes? Why would the Shadow Monarch do such a thing?"
Kanawha shrugged.
"Only she knows, and she isn't saying. All I know is that's the hand I and the other Iron Elves were dealt, and we've played it as best we can."
"I was dealt a different hand," Vecina said, moving her hands underneath his shirt and resting them on his ribs. "Perhaps I can change your outlook on things in some small way."
Kanawha raised an eyebrow, but said nothing. Her hands probed along his ribcage with care, but it still hurt.
"Easy, woman. They're bruised enough already," he said.
She pulled her hands away from his chest and began rummaging in a small cloth bag she carried.
"Your name, Hir Ol Osvin. It sounds Kalarian."
"One of the finest in the Kalarian Empire," Kanawha said.
He shifted his behind in the saddle, trying to find the right up-and-down rhythm with the horse.
Lieutenant Osveen held off a force of 1,000 orcs with only 10 men at the Battle of Yakut Gorge. That was during the border troubles a century ago.
Is there a time in the Empire's history that it didn't have border troubles? Vecina asked.
Kanawa let the barb slide. The orcs could have gone around the gorge and taken the small outpost the lieutenant and his men were guarding, but the hairy buggers were compelled to fight, and Osveen and his men slaughtered them.
Compelled? Vecina asked, leaning forward to rest her chin against his right shoulder.
Osveen had been a playwright before joining the army. His greatest claim to fame was creating amusing limericks for his plays.
Ah, but you're the daughter of the great Almectakoi. Perhaps your ears are a bit too tender for something like that.
Kanawa swore he could feel the skin of her cheek turn hot.
My ears are in fitter shape than yours, she said.
You wound me, madam.
Vecina went back to rummaging. So tell me one of these limericks.
Kanawa readjusted again in the saddle and gave it some thought. Let me see. A witch had a useless new suitor. His device was unable to suit her. So she went to her potions, set a new spell in motion, and inserted a newt instead of a neuter.
Vecina stopped what she was doing. And this would make orcs want to fight?
Kanawa shook his head. No. Osveen came up with a bunch of limericks and other insults to draw the orcs into a fight.
Newts have no intrinsic magical properties, you know, Vecina continued. I don't understand why a witch would have any around in the first place.
It's just a... I mean, it's supposed to be funny, Kanawa said.
But it isn't, is it?
Ah,
Vecina exclaimed, patting his arm. Now I understand. You chose his name because, like you, he's not very funny either, right?
Kanawa tried to remember why he'd hated being alone in the forest, and was having a hard time doing it.
I chose it because Osveen was a rogue, taking on overwhelming odds with little more than a sword in his wits. Besides, I had to. Elves who leave their tribe and are reject... who choose not to join the Long Watch, must leave behind their pochta, their dream name.
Not really funny at all, she said,
completely ignoring his explanation. Raise your arms again. A pungent smell filled the air, at once musky and acidic.
What are you doing back there? Kanawa asked, doing as he was told nonetheless.
A moment later, something wet and cold attached itself to his chest. He opened his eyes, and, looking down through the wide neck of his shirt, saw Vecina plastering leaves over the broken rib, a brown goo holding them in place.
Not so tight, he muttered, but the feeling was surprisingly good.
You're very good with your hands, he said, closing his eyes as the pain began to subside.
Not just my hands, she said, beginning to squeeze the leaves tighter against his skin. The wet poultice on his chest grew fire hot, and he began to sweat. His breathing slowed, and he felt himself falling off the horse.
What the? Was all he managed before she pulled him upright as if he weighed no more than a baby.
The air shimmered as his vision blurred, and every muscle in his body flowed like water. A moment later, Kanawa was standing in the birthing meadow of the wolf oaks, which meant he was dreaming, which annoyed him no end.
I know how this goes already, he told himself, frustrated that his own mind would betray him by making him relive the first great humiliation of his life. He tried to race through the scene so that he could move on to something else, but the view before him refused to change. Accepting the inevitable, he walked to the center of the birthing meadow, brushing past the young sapling cubs stretching themselves skyward. The sun was high overhead, yet with each step the air got noticeably colder, and the grass beneath his feet began to crackle. Strange, he thought, remembering his time in the meadow was quite warm. Now, however, frost was spreading out to cover everything. Most of the sapling cubs were big enough that the frost had no effect on them. But one tiny wolf oak began to bow, its slender trunk slowly curving toward the earth as its leaves started to blacken. He walked toward the little sapling cub and then stopped short. It was silver. Only once in many decades was a silver born to the wolf oaks, and not without cost. Even as he recalled that there had been no silver when he had gone to the birthing meadow, another elf entered the meadow and walked toward the sapling cub. She was young and beautiful, her eyes filled with love and concern for the little tree. A voice sounded in his head then, a scared, weak voice, begging for help. It was the sapling cub. And it was dying. Kana was swayed on his feet, overcome with the power in that small, fragile voice. It yearned for life, for the chance to grow its roots deep into the earth and stretch its branches high into the open sky. Never in his life had he felt such need, such desire to live. More elves filled the meadow, and it was clear that unlike the elf before Kanawa, the silver wolf oak's pleas would find no solace with them. "Quiktola misk jin, to life the strongest," said the elves of the Long Watch, turning and leaving the birthing meadow. Tears of sorrow and rage welled up in the elf woman's eyes as she stared after the departing elves. Kanawa understood her anger and her grief. "We must save it," he said, hoping there might yet be a way. "We have to save it." The scene before him suddenly changed, and he was now standing on top of a black bare mountain, the wind tearing at his clothes. He shivered with the cold, his breath coming in painful bursts. The little sapling cub was now a full-grown wolf oak, but twisted and jagged, its roots stabbing the rocky ground beneath it while its branches flailed at the sky. Thick black ichor oozed from its trunk, staining the once silver bark, and the voice that had cried out for life now raged with an insane, consuming fury. The elf from the meadow was there too, stepping between the slashing branches which parted for her. She rested a hand on its trunk, uncaring of the ichor that ran over her skin, lighting it afire in a blaze of black frost. She was no longer young and beautiful, age and something more having carved great lines into her features. Her eyes, however, were still filled with concern and love, but with an intensity that froze Kanawa to the bone when he looked into them. "Now I will save you too," the Shadow Monarch said, reaching out with her burning cold hand and touching the tip of his left ear. In his nightmare, Kanawa burned.